Hi, this is Mary. Welcome to my podcast, Mental State, where I talk about all things mental health and more. So today I have on my podcast, Adam Boardman. He is joining me today as a guest host. Adam is a licensed psychotherapist based in Los Angeles, and his practice focuses on athlete mental health, men in relationships, and perfectionists. So today, Adam and I are talking about dating, one of my favorite topics, and Adam shared with me a mantra of sorts that evolved as he navigated the dating world before he got married. So he's going to share it with you all, along with other insights into the male psyche and dating. Now, I've known Adam for a couple of years, and I've always had the best conversations with him, which is why I wanted to bring him on as a guest host. Adam, thanks for joining.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting when you were talking about this rule of thumb that you had when you were dating, which was
honesty accelerates relationships.
Honesty accelerates relationships. So yeah, tell me about that.
Well, before I met my wife, I took what I like to call the liberal arts approach to dating, which is you date as many people as possible in as many different circumstances. And it was a great experience for me. I loved connecting with people. I am someone who's always been really open to different types of relationships, particularly with women. I grew up with a lot around women, raised by women. So I always had a lot of female friends who weren't just romantic to me. That was something that I always took kind of a broad view to it.
So did growing up with all those women and having a lot of female friends give you a good insight into the way the female brain works?
Yes, that's an understatement. It very much did. I definitely got a specific type of view of women based on the women that were raising me. I think it gave me a real advantage in relationships, in all my relationships, to not only understand how women work, how women's brains work, how women experience the world and how their bodies work, really. That's a lot of information that I think a lot of men just aren't exposed to. And it also made me appreciate how much some of my male friends and colleagues weren't getting.
Oh, okay. So in terms of, were you the go-to guy for dating advice for your guy friends?
I don't know about dating advice, but definitely I think for getting them to understand what their girlfriend was trying to tell them, yeah, I would often be a resource for my friends. So interestingly, it's one thing that comes to mind is that I was raised in going to public schools in California. And then when I moved when I was in high school to Portland, Oregon, I ended up going to a Catholic school and I became the local expert on birth control because all these Catholic kids didn't know anything about it. And like, I'd been going to public school my whole life where I'm like, I got this from like sixth grade, I think. But regardless, I was the guy who sort of maybe understood women a little bit better. Not that it actually resulted in me getting girlfriends, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I went to an all-girls school for 6 years of my life from middle school to throughout high school. And thankfully, I grew up with brothers. And so, you know, at least I had that outlet in terms of being able to, like, observe the male behavior. And I know that, you know, when I went to college, it felt like a candy store. It was like a free-for-all going from this very conservative all-girls school to, a more non-conservative progressive college. It was just such an interesting shift. And I never had a boyfriend in high school. I mean, I went to proms and things like that, but I never had a boyfriend. So even though I was very well-versed in sex education, because I did have some more experienced girlfriends when I was in high school, I personally didn't, you know, get a lot of sexual experience or even relational experience until I went to college. So that was kind of an interesting shift for me. And so, you know, in terms of like your rule of thumb about honesty, is this something that you were doing in high school or is this something that you kind of developed over the years of your dating experience?
I like how you're framing this, Mary, because you're seeing yourself in the context of how you changed over time relative to the environment around you. And I really relate to that. Because whenever I was in high school, I was so repressed. I was so repressed. I grew up evangelical Christian among these very wounded women who were very wounded by just shitty men, okay? Whether it be my father, my stepfather, the other, previous boyfriends or husbands or whatever. And I think that I was sort of imbued with a female experience, but a narrow one. Part of that was I was really told what it means to, like, what not to be as a guy. Don't be this kind of guy, because that's the kind of guy that hurt us. And we're all a bunch of victims who don't want to do any self-reflection. And we're just going to project it all onto toxic qualities we see in men. And so the challenge for me that I had to work my way out of, that was really driving the repression, which was then resulting in a lot of disconnection, a lot of missed connections in high school and college. Mm. Wouldn't allow myself to actually connect with people because I was being forced to live with this idea that, like, essentially being male is bad. Because there were parts of me that are male that are totally healthy and normal and appropriate that I was cut off from because I thought if I allowed any of my maleness to exist or certain parts of my maleness to exist, that was being a bad guy. And that's not what women wanted.
And then as a kid, when you grow up, like, kids grow up with black and white thinking. So it has to be like all this or none of this. And so it's kind of like, how do you digest that information? You know, when you're a kid, because everything's like so black and white, but when you get older, you're like, oh, wait, there's some gray area in this.
Oh, absolutely. And you just don't have, it's funny, as a kid, you don't have context for your context.
Exactly. Yeah.
You don't know how to make sense of your family or your culture or your community or your church or your school or whatever, and how these things form us. So for me, growing up this way, it was this relief to go into this new environment of at least the Catholics, like they actually drank and screwed. They went to confession and felt guilty about it. And they were all tied up in their own weird knots. But the evangelicals, like, they didn't do any of that stuff. And they were like, they were not my people. You know, I'm not trying to take that away from anybody. If that's, you know, your spiritual or religious practice is evangelical, I'm not trying to say it's all bad. But for me, it was a horrible place to be. It was very much not congruent with me. And the things that they were giving me weren't that useful. So I had to work my way out of those to find my authentic self. And in high school, I really wanted a girlfriend, but kind of couldn't get one. And then just because I was tied up in my own knots. And by the time I got to college, I was starting to emerge from some of that. But it wasn't until I started therapy at my senior year and then started doing it post-college into my 20s is when a lot of this stuff started coming to focus, because that's when I could deconstruct and sort of take apart, some of those things were really inhibiting me from connecting with others, which is the point at which I had to develop these new tools to being like, okay, how do I exist? How do I let myself connect? How do I let myself be male, or in some cases express that I'm attracted to a person or interested in sex or whatever, in a way that feels allowable, but also is getting me with the right people, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's so great too, that you started therapy your senior year of college. And because I think that, you know, growing up in whatever family system you grew up with that, you know, is not, doesn't kind of develop this secure attachment style, right? And so if you're not growing up in that kind of family system, you're really left to sort of wander and wonder. It's kind of like, you know what doesn't feel right. You know what doesn't feel right. But then it's really hard to understand what does feel right, because sometimes what does feel right feels strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if you grow up with some type of insecure attachment style. And so it's so great that you found a therapist where you can kind of untangle some of these knots that you had gotten yourself into and really start to understand for yourself what feels right for you going into a relationship with somebody else.
Absolutely. And some of these things we started this conversation with this sort of affirmative statement, this sort of thing. I was like, oh yeah, I figured this out. This is a thing you can hang on to and move forward with to help you progress. But the honesty accelerates relationships. That was very helpful and supportive for me, but it pales in comparison to just removing the roadblocks, to realize, to be able to figure out those blind spots, those inhibitors to connection that sometimes can just be like what I think women want or are not, or whatever these assumptions you have. I'm actually curious, like, what were the ones for you that you, whenever you did start finally kind of getting boyfriends and getting into relationships, like what were the things that either you had to sort of let go of, that you had ideas about what boys or men were like, or, you know, what they weren't like?
I think one of the things that I had to let go of was, like, I grew up with a certain type. I grew up with a list. And so because I went to a more conservative school, there were just like certain kinds of boys that were the ideals,
mm-hmm.
you know, white, come from a good, wealthy family, tall, athletic, just kind of portrayed that all American guy. So I think it was just like this very like aspirational thing, because I was surrounded by people who were also aspirational in terms of like what kind of people that they liked, that it wasn't until college where I got like to be in a bigger pool of people where I got to sort of let some of those things go and experience people with like more alternative lifestyles, or, you know, they weren't like the football player jock. They were like the skater boy. And so I kind of let a lot of those like surface level things go when I started dating in college. Like, I was actually kind of looking more for like the interesting, artsy, alternative person, as opposed to sort of like the GQ model type of person. And I also realized that being aspirational in that way didn't feel good to me. Like, it wasn't like really feeding my soul. And also because I was now out of my family system, so I was able to show up more as myself. And so I feel like my kind of my picker was more honed into, you know, what kind of person that I felt good around and what kind of person nourished me and what kind of person I could have, you know, fun with.
I love that perspective. The version of ourself that comes out around people is not something that I hear people talk about much, especially in context of relationships, specifically dating. It's something that I found to be so useful, is that how do I feel about me when I'm on a date or when I'm around somebody? Because that's who I would always feel like I was the best version of myself with the people that I would end up becoming my girlfriend. Like, very quickly, I realized that after, you know, when I was got a few reps, so to speak. By the way, I'm talking about these women I've dated is terrible. They were all real authentic relationships. It'd been like the more opportunities I had to date and to see where they went and see how they played out and see, like, again, review kind of like what was in the postmortem, like, why did I get into this relationship? What was it about this person? How did it progress? You know, we all kind of go through these processes when we look back at a relationship or the people we dated, because it is a real opportunity to sort of test some of our assumptions. Because a lot of it is driven, a lot of the way people operate or are acculturated is to be like, aspire to this collection of characteristics. Are they hot? Are they tall? Are they rich? Are they athletic? Are they whatever? Are they the GQ guy? And if they match that, then that's someone you want to date. That's someone that's going to make you happy. But like, I'm not saying it's not nice to date hot, rich people. You know, they're not great. Man, listen, I'm all for it. You know what I mean? Like, find love where you find it. If you're having fun with a hot, rich person, congratulations. But there's a lot of perks there. There's also downsides, but there's perks. Regardless, like, I realized that all of these women that I was involved with that turned into real relationships, a lot of it had to do with how authentic I was being. I could be very early on with them. What version of myself came out? That was a really interesting touchstone for me as I got more into my 30s, because I didn't get married until I was 38 or 39. And as I got deeper into life, I realized that was the most useful thing to turn to. wasn't these ideas that other people had about who I should date. Like, are they X, Y, or Z? It's like, okay, who am I actually? And it gives me the ability to own that, to not be like, oh, I don't know. Are they this way? Are they not? It's like, F that, man. Let's be honest with myself. This is another type of honesty accelerating relationships. If I can really sit down with me, and if you can really sit down with yourself and be like, what version of it is coming out with me? Is it a pleaser person? Am I feeling like I'm afraid to bring certain parts of myself out?
That's like such a key right there. Is that, am I afraid to bring certain parts of myself out? And it may not necessarily be because the other person can't be there for it. That can also be part of like, what is it that's making me afraid? And if I do reveal this side of myself, is this going to drive the other person away?
Exactly. The best part of this realization for me was realizing that if I share this with a person and whatever it is, and it could be big things. I want kids. I don't want kids. Or like, I'm never leaving LA. Cause when I moved to LA, I was like, I'm never leaving California. I had absolute clarity on that. And I was like, this is something that I love LA. I don't want to leave.
And the other fun example that you brought up was Dungeons and Dragons, right? I mean, I'm not saying you're like a Dungeons and Dragons guy, but like, what if you were, right? And what if that was something that you're like, every Wednesday and Saturday I play D&D with my friends, or I'm really into this.
And some people
feels embarrassing because it's dorky.
Yeah. It can be embarrassing. You open yourself up to judgment.
Yeah.
But if it's really intrinsic to you, it's really important to you, and someone judges it right away, like, do you want to be with that person who's like, oh, D&D is for losers and virgins or whatever? Not that there's anything wrong with virgin. You know what I mean? Losers and incels. How about, let's go with that. They say something really mean and you're like, actually, like, I love it. Like, it's really rich. And I mean, I've talked to people who are really into D&D and fantasy board games. Like, I can understand the appeal. You know, it's not quite for me, but like, totally makes sense. Great way to connect, spend time, use your imagination. Really cool. Great. But if somebody responds with judgment, then you know that person isn't the right fit for you. And the thing is that it's accelerated their relationship to an end that would have happened anyway. Because if you didn't tell them about D&D and you start dating, you get into it, then all of a sudden you're like, hey, you know, we've been dating for 3 months. Like, you know, by the way, like, I've got a D&D thing with my buddies on Wednesday or whatever. And they're like, wait, what? You're into D&D? Oh, gross. And they say something really mean and gross, and they let you know that they're not a person you can be safe around. You just wasted 3 months. You know, or maybe not wasted, but like, there's 3 months that are gone. That's the opportunity cost that you could have saved. You could have gotten to this point sooner, probably with less damage, if that had become more clear more quickly.
I like that you said, yeah, maybe not necessarily wasted, but and then on the flip side, it's like, oh, okay, now I know. In my next relationship or the next time I'm dating somebody, I'm going to bring that up in the first date.
It also accelerates your relationship to yourself.
Exactly.
It helps you get to know you, because you are in charge of managing you. You are in charge of being the strategic CEO of you. What do you actually need? If you need someone who can tolerate Dungeons and Dragons, whatever that thing is for you, then you need someone who can tolerate Dungeons and Dragons. Maybe the other thing is that it's not necessarily a character thing in the other person that they're like, oh, I don't, you know, D&D people are nerds and I don't date nerds. It could be, I don't know, maybe their ex was really into Dungeons and Dragons and they can't handle that right now. Or maybe they're also really into Dungeons and Dragons. And if you say that and they're like, you're into D&D, I love D&D. Hell fucking yeah, man. Let's go. Ethan's on them. Now look at the place you're at. Look how much more quickly you've gotten to the place where you can both connect on and share this thing that brings you energy and joy in your life.
You know, I think this is such an important topic, because what I hear a lot in people who are having, you know, first dates is that sometimes it just becomes like a past relationship dumpster fire where people are just dumping around their past relationships. And I think like, that kind of stuff can or cannot be important. I don't know, right? Because it can also tell you a lot about how a person is within the context of a relationship. But I think like these other things about like, these are the things that are important to me, as opposed to let me give you like my past history of all the people that I've ever dated and why it didn't work out. It's like, okay, I don't really need to know that, but like, what have you learned about yourself that you want to bring forward into this next relationship?
I love that. Is that what have you actually learned about yourself? There's this thing in the discourse now. I follow a lot of feminist media and a lot of really feminist social media accounts. And there's this thing that I've read about where it's like women are saying, like, show me your receipts for therapy, right? Have you heard this? And I get it. Like, I get it. I mean, the thing is that like people can go to therapy and do no work.
I have clients that are like, I don't date anybody unless they're in therapy.
Yeah. Totally feel you there. And it's not a bad, again, not a bad rule of thumb. But the real question is what you just said, Mary, which is, what have you learned about yourself? What do you know about yourself? How self-aware are you? How connected to yourself are you? Because frankly, especially when you're, you know, if you're dating people who aren't self-aware, then that's, and they haven't done that work, that's work that kind of can fall to you, you know, that you have to then do the work to accommodate them or work around them or whatever, because they're not owning their own stuff. They don't have that knowledge. And also it's something that you can trust in a person, right? Like if they know who they are and who they're not, and then they choose you, you can put a lot of faith in that decision. You know, they've really done the reps, so to speak. They've taken the general
or if you choose them.
Or you choose them, exactly. Yeah, and yeah. I think people, they want, there's something very attractive and honestly, frankly, increasingly urgent in people being able to have self-awareness and have done work on themselves going into relationships. That at least you definitely see in the discourse around hetero women talking about dating hetero men.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have any, I guess, opinions or thoughts about people who haven't been in long-term relationships when they're well into their 30s?
I would just say that romantic relationships are just one type of relationship. You can absolutely get a relational education in terms of people or yourself and still have experiences that can inform the needs that make up the version of you that you're bringing to a romantic relationship, or needs or desires or whatever, deal breakers. You can still suss a lot of that out without necessarily having been in a lot of romantic relationships or a lot of long romantic relationships, whatever that might be. So yeah, I'm pretty, I don't know, bearish on that kind of thinking, that being like, oh, I haven't done this. I haven't learned anything. I'm unqualified. Not necessarily. It just means you may have to sort of pull from different sources to get that sense of cohesion in yourself, to pull it together. To otherwise, you fall into this trap of judging yourself as unavailable without even giving you a chance to connect to somebody. I'm not sure if this is making sense.
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's also like, well, what? Yeah, when you were talking about romantic relationship is only one kind of relationship, and so you know, what are the other kinds of relationships that you're having, right? Like, do you have, you know, long-term relationships with friends? Do you have a, you know, pretty good relationship with family members? Do you feel kind of steady in other parts of your life, right? Are there like, you know, hobbies or interests that you've had for years and years and years? And I don't think that having a history of being a serial monogamist, because that might just be a whole other issue, is because you just might not be wanting to waste a lot of time being in a relationship that you don't necessarily want to be in, which is what a lot of people end up doing.
You're absolutely right. Is that the real question here is intimacy, not relationships.
Yes.
And where have you been close to people? Because I know so many people who have, or have encountered them, who are serial monogamous, who are always in a relationship, but those relationships, what are they actually? Is there actually intimacy there? Or is there just an arrangement? Is it just a situation? Yeah, I have this person. They're my boyfriend or my girlfriend or my husband or my wife, whatever. Yes, you're in a relationship, but that doesn't mean that you've actually, are you close to each other? Are you authentic? How self-aware are you? How well do you actually know them? How much are you just acting out a role that you're supposed to play? Or how are you using this person to avoid actual intimacy? Because if I have a boyfriend, or I have a girlfriend, then I must be doing everything right. So I don't have to actually look into myself. I don't have to spend time with the parts of me that are uncomfortable because I have this sort of source of external validation. If you're single if you're not in a romantic relationship, that also says something to me about your ability to live in a culture that really emphasizes those. And that's an interesting thing about someone to me. And it also means that you have a perspective that people who have always been in a relationship don't, because you actually had to spend more time with yourself. So maybe that means you have a more intimate connection with yourself. Maybe it means that you've actually experienced real intimacy in your close friendships. Obviously, romantic intimacy, sexual intimacy, they're qualitatively different than platonic intimacy, but they're not that different, if you ask me, in terms of being able to understand yourself and who you are in a relationship. That can be applied to when you do meet someone who's available and you are connecting with.
So I want to get back to your rule of thumb about honesty being an accelerator of relationships. Yeah. So I'm curious about, like, if you're too honest or too upfront on a date, and maybe the other person doesn't have a good relationship with honesty or openness. So I'm just wondering, like, how does one navigate that in the beginnings of a relationship?
That is a great question, because you have to figure out what your sensibility is, what your thresholds are. I'll just speak from my own perspective. I found there was, the more work I did being really honest with myself, the easier it was to deal with, to navigate the presentation or the communication of that. A lot of women that dated me would give me the kind of feedback that they'd never dated a man quite like me. And it was not always a compliment. Let's be clear.
You're like, thanks. They're like, no.
And I'm like, yeah, you're special, but that's not, I don't know.
Yeah, not special in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think I did have, between being raised by women, between all the work I'd done on myself in therapy before I even became a therapist, was I think I had this sort of a like self-awareness and emotional fluency that would overwhelm a lot of women, or that would disorient them at the very best. I would also, whenever you ask me that question though, I actually first thought of my experience of this, receiving it, because especially when you start dating in your 30s, and I was not that age restricted. I was dating a lot of older women, as some younger women, but mostly like my age or older. I would bump into this issue of biological clocks. Totally fair. Like women who were being honest with me in a way that was actually a real barrier to connection from my point of view, because I was really interested in an organic relationship. Like, again, for me, like, I would show up to a date with all sorts of relationships on the table. Maybe we'll be friends. Maybe we'll be, I don't know, just like super casual sexual partners. Maybe we'll be like exclusive boyfriend, girlfriend, or anywhere else. Maybe this will build a long-term partnership. I was totally open to it. And when I'd meet some of these women, they'd be like, I don't want to waste my time. I want to get married and have kids.
Firm donor.
Yeah. Only want to be with somebody who is interested in serious relationships. And I'd be like, hey, look, I am eventually, maybe right now, like I'm still kind of maybe dealing with this breakup, or I've got this, my bandwidth is taken up. It's not that I'm closed off to that, but that might not be only priority right now. That might not be the definition of where I'm at. And I find a lot of women would, just from my experience, create these circumstances of pressure that were incredibly counterproductive to actual connection. Kind of get what you're looking for here. And I don't really think the way that you're talking about it is helping you. It's not helping me as a man feel safe with you, because it makes you, I almost feel bullied to be like, and judged, because it's like, oh, you're just another man who is afraid of commitment. I do want a commitment. I just don't want it with somebody.
I just don't want a commitment on the first date.
I mean, look, let me put this in other terms. Is that as a guy, like, I know what it's like to live in a man's body and be like horny in ways I've rarely heard women articulate. Okay. Just like the sexual urgency of a man, especially a single man. I do not need to spend a second explaining to any single woman who's been on a dating app what being on the other end must be like, of like men's desire, men's sexual urgency, men's inappropriate behavior, of being like affronting sex in like a flirtation or a dating environment, right? And like sometimes I'd be like, all I want to do is like go back to my apartment with as few words as possible and take our clothes off. And there were times I felt like that. But it was, I wouldn't say that because I realized what would that be like for a person hearing it, right? What would a woman think if she heard that? She'd be like, oh my God, what the hell is he doing? Is he crazy? Like, we just met each other. Why is he bringing up sex immediately, right? And I'm not trying to get too deep into false equivalencies here, but like, as a rule of thumb, like, if there's something like that that's kind of loaded, like, it does take a second to create a sense of connection and safety and relational relevance in the space to bring that stuff into it. But when it's appropriate, when there is an opportunity, if you can use that opportunity to be honest, if you've established safety, if you're like, hey, look, we've gotten to know each other. Hey, look, I am really horny. Or, hey, look, I really am kind of interested in only kind of dating for a long-term commitment. If that person's like, I'm not going to have sex until I'm married. Okay, then I may want to move on.
Right.
The vice versa of that is like, I'm only looking for casual relationships right now, or I'm absolutely turned off, like not open to commitment. Then that just means it's time to move on. You've met the end, the natural organic end of that relationship, and you've gotten there in an efficient way, you know, that's appropriate. That's kind of how I would think about it, you know, because it is hard. It is hard to talk about itself.
Well, I mean, I think that this, you know, just loops back to the honesty part, because there's so many dates that are one, two dates, end up with sex, and then that's the end of the relationship. But that it's like, it feels like none of this is really talked about, right? So there's an expectation from the other person who might be attaching more deeply or thinking that it's going somewhere. And instead of just being upfront and just saying like, maybe we went out on one date and then the second date is like, hey, I am really physically attracted to you and I really want to have sex with you. And I'm not really sure if this is going to go any farther than that. And I just want to know if you're open to that.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of like, oh, the person ghosted me or did the. So it's like, I mean, that's why, like, because first of all, honesty can definitely accelerate that relationship, right? To its end.
Yeah.
Whether it ends up in a sexual encounter or not. But it's like, I feel like, yeah, just even being having those types of conversations and being more honest about that so that people are just not like left hanging and blowing in the wind and wondering when the person is going to contact them or feeling ghosted.
So much of this, you're speaking so much to just the self-awareness there of what's going on with me and sharing it with another person. And it's hard to do that. It's just hard to do that, but it's so central to not only dating, but also I have so many clients who are 10 years into a marriage and we're working on these skills because they're so important to be able to that sort of narration work. And it's the relationship that we all have to work on is the relationship with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hearing you say, Mary, is like being like, hey, look, I'm really attracted to you. I really would like to have sex with you. That A, you have to know that you feel that way. And B, have the words and confidence to express it. But sharing that with a person, maybe that would lead to less ghosting because there'd be less surprises if you kind of are clear in what's actually going on with a person or you're clear with them of what's going on with you. I don't know.
Yeah. Or maybe even ghosting wouldn't even be a thing because it could just be like, all right, let's go back and have sex. And this probably won't go anywhere after that. And that's okay because we both want to get our urges.
Yeah. You know,
Matt.
It's so, yeah. What do I need from a person?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need from a person to do this? I think that's a question. I don't know if a lot of people ask themselves, what do I need from a person before I have sex with them? I remember thinking about this back when I was not in a monogamous relationship with my. What do I actually need? And for me, I think because I grew up back to the sex ed in public schools, like I had a really clear grasp of physical safety. You know, I needed to know, had they been tested? What was their relationship to testing? Is there a presumption of exclusivity or not? Is there, are they comfortable with condoms? You know, like, what does that mean? Like, how are we protecting ourselves? Like, and then there'd be another level of conversations whenever we stopped using condoms. And I had all these protocols. But that was work I did on my own. You know, I did all that labor myself. And even with women, this is another ways that would disorient women. And I was like, who are you sleeping with? Like, you've never had these conversations before. I was like, especially with women, like their vulnerability for contracting STDs is so much higher. Like, if you look at, you know, in heterosexual intercourse, like male to female passage rate are like exponentially higher than they are female to male for almost any given STD, let alone pregnancy concerns. And I could think about that for my physical health. And I would do that work and it was always these surprising conversations, but emotionally as well, like, what are your terms, you know, to even get committed to somebody? What are your terms for even going on a second date? What are your terms for sleeping with somebody for your emotional safety?
And that's the thing. It's like, if I'm scared to ask for my needs to be met because I'm scared that I'm going to lose this person if I'm asking for my needs to be met and they may reject me. And now I don't have anything, right? And so when you come from like an insecure attachment style, especially like if you run anxious, it's like, I don't want to do anything to rock the boat. So I'm not going to ask for my needs to be met because I don't want to lose this person.
That's so relatable, what you're describing right now, because you are afraid. Mm-hmm. And if someone rejects you for those, do you want to be with that person? Do you want to be with people who don't care about your safety in the way that it makes sense to you? And that's a question only people can answer. And I don't think many people would be like, yeah, I don't care at all. You know,
and I think that's why it's so important to, especially if you're coming from like an insecure attachment style and you don't have a really strong support system around relationships, to be in therapy while dating, because I feel like dating can be very discombobulating. And so I think it's really important to have something that you can tether yourself to while you're going through these experiences. And just going back to you and how you were like, okay, I got to start seeing a therapist. Something clicked in you where it's like, something's not working for me right now. I need to see a therapist. I need to figure some things out. And that you were able to have somebody to bounce things off of and to process with as you were navigating dating in your 20s and 30s.
That's absolutely right. It was, and well stated as well, is that the importance of having resources there, whether a therapy is among the best, whatever they are, to be able to process this stuff and sort out what is going on, what is even happening, because discombobulation is exactly the term. It is so, there's so much noise. There's so many factors. There's so many dimensions of these connections, whether they be physical or mental or relational or emotional. And some of that has to do with what's me, what's them, and what's the connection. And being able to separate those out and navigate them is so challenging. I was lucky enough to find some really powerful female therapists and who were so smart and so inhabited, so complete people, that they were able to really break through some of the things that were keeping me from orienting myself, you know, to break through some of that noise, to help me develop these touch-ups. I didn't do all this on my own by any stretch. And the reason why I was even able to build these tools was because of the power of a therapist. And for me, I specifically needed, especially in my 20s, I really needed a woman to be like, hey, dude, I can say this. Not all women feel this way, or a lot of feminine women feel this way. Like, to isolate, to make me realize how limited the voices that I formed my perspectives were.
So
if you're, and like, anybody can do this. Anybody can go find a good therapist, hopefully find a good therapist. Anybody can get into that space where they're working with somebody who hopefully can help them see this more clearly, you know?
Yeah. And I love that you went and you specifically sought out female therapists, because also, you know, what I'm sensing is that you were realizing, okay, the messages that I was getting growing up are not fitting with who I am as a person. And so let me go and, you know, possibly seek like let's see what other women are thinking about these things, right? And then just being able to get a different perspective from a female, I can imagine just kind of like really helped you reorient yourself to the female experience.
Absolutely. I remember, this therapist I had for, I don't know, almost 10 years. Her name was Trisha. Incredible. Just absolute powerhouse. And she would just say the funniest thing sometimes. And I'll never forget the first time she said, she had this real breathy, I started seeing her in Seattle. She'd wear a lot of statement jewelry. You know what I mean? And she would be like, she would say these things and be like, Adam, women find boundaries very sexy. I'm like 25 being like, what is she trying to tell me right now? And part of it, I think she was trying to get through to me being like, hey man, you need to take boundaries more seriously. And telling a 25-year-old man that he'll be more sexy if he does something, he'll probably do it. So props to her for getting through to me. But also, like, I think that she was speaking to the fact that, like, hey, look, there's, you know, the kind of relationships that are healthiest, like the people with boundaries are going to respect boundaries and the people without it won't. And I think for me at the time, I thought
that's so true.
I thought that in order to get closeness and intimacy and relationships and sex and all these things, I had to not have boundaries because that was the house I grew up in. Boundaries were not allowed. So yeah, that's what I thought I had to be. And it was like, oh my God, it was such a transformation.
It was so interesting because when you grow up in a household where boundaries aren't allowed, and now I'm dating somebody with boundaries, that person I could see that person as being like, ugh, what a jerk. Right. And so it warps my perception of reality.
Absolutely. It totally warps your perception of reality. And just being able to account for how you're warping your own reality or your experiences, your frame of reference, your attachment style, whatever you want to say it.
Yeah.
Be known for that.
Yeah. Because if I'm like, sure, whatever, you know, whatever floats your boat, call me whenever, I don't care. I have no boundaries and I'm not setting any boundaries up for myself about anything. And then somebody sets boundaries, that can just be so jarring. And then and then what I am perceiving is getting reflected back to me is like, oh, I don't want to spend time with you. And right. It's like, no, this person has boundaries. And that has nothing to do with whether or not they want to spend time with me. They have boundaries.
Right. That's absolutely right. It can be totally disorienting. And, you know, we're all just doing the best we can based on what we have. And it's not that people don't deserve to be in relationships or are crazy or anything if they draw those conclusions. It may just be because of where they came from.
Exactly.
And it's totally understandable.
Exactly. So I want to leave our listeners with just a couple of tips around honesty. It can be a relationship accelerator. And I'm just curious if you have anything that you want to.
Yeah, I think that the honesty accelerates relationships is like anything you have to do with relationships is that the most important relationship is with yourself. And you can always check in with yourself. Take a moment, take a breath, and ask yourself, am I being honest with what's going on with me? How well do I understand what's going on inside me around this person? The reactions I'm having to them. What part of it is me? What part of it is them? To the best of your ability, try to be honest with yourself. You might see some things that you don't like, but that's you trying to tell yourself something. Mm-hmm. The more you can listen to that, the more you'll know what to do. And sometimes what to do is, hey, I need to bring this to the person. I need to tell them this thing. And sometimes it's actually the opposite. It's like, oh, that's just a me thing. And I don't need to necessarily bring it into the relationship right now. At this stage, maybe it's really early, or maybe it's just they're sensitive around this thing. So I have to be a little more conscientious about that. It's a rule of thumb. It's not a mandate. You know, you can go as fast or slow as you want. And sometimes there may be things about yourself you're not ready to take on, or you're not ready to take on alone. And maybe a therapist or a good friend or a close relative or something you can talk to about it. But don't pretend it's not there.
Yeah. And I think And I think a lot of times, especially like what happens in, and I'll just be very like gendered about this, what happens in the female circles is that we want to be validated. So if I'm dating somebody and something happens and I'm not happy with how the date went, I will call up my friend and can you believe? And I want my friend to not be reflective. I want them to say like that jerk. So, you know, that's why, again, why I'm like, if you go to a therapist, hopefully a therapist can provide you with something that's a little bit more non-biased than somebody, because even like with, even with my own friendships, I have to check myself and think, is what I'm about to say going to be helpful? Is this what they want to hear? Or is this going to be harmful? And so I have to remove myself from being a therapist or being what the devil's advocate and just be more supportive and giving my friend what I can tell that they're fishing for.
Absolutely. And you can validate, and this is something that isn't, I didn't make up myself, but validate the feeling, don't necessarily validate the experience.
Yeah.
Experience being the conclusion that you're, that somebody's drawing. Oh my God, he set a boundary. He's such a jerk. He hates me. He doesn't want to date me. It's like, okay, I hear that you're feeling panicked or sad or rejected. I don't know if that's what's actually going on though. Mm-hmm. Being able to use a crowbar and pry those apart sometimes is how strong they're linked with each other. I find that in a lot of times when I, you know, when I've been party to a lot of, let's just, these sort of conversations that happen between men too, but yeah, in female communication, it is absolutely leading with absolute validation of your experience. Don't get me wrong, I'm a hardcore feminist, believe women. There's a lot of other implications of this point, and I don't want to oversimplify it. For the sake of this conversation, though, realize even when you're talking to yourself, when you're doing these check-ins, getting to what am I actually feeling? I'm feeling rejected. Am I being rejected, or am I just sort of sad this isn't going faster?
Right.
Maybe this guy isn't the one. You know what I mean? Or maybe I don't know if he's the one. So if he's not the one, maybe he's not the one. And then I'm still alone. And it's easy to get like, to have these things sort of like snowball in these much bigger experiences. And the next thing you know, you're blowing up his phone. You know what I mean? And then he's like, what? Why is she making all these demands? What's going on? I thought we were having a nice time. To get very gendered and stereotypical.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these things can get out of control really fast. But like, look, like we're all learning. Give yourself some grace, but try to approach yourself with, am I being honest with myself? How important is this need? How important is my, what is my Dungeons and Dragons?
What is my Dungeons and Dragons? Yeah.
What is that thing?
Yeah.
And then the more you can kind of make, be at peace with yourself, the more reasonable and approachable and workable it's going to be whenever you bring that to the relationship with a person. Even if you've gone on one or two dates, that's still the relationship. Hey, look, it's really important to me that I spend holiday, you know, whatever the holidays are, my religion's important to me. My Dungeons and Dragons is important to me. My whatever that might be for you. My vegetarianism, I don't know. Whatever those things are, if you're really honest with yourself, you're going to be much more grounded. You're going to feel much more, you're going to be much clearer to understand and less threatening typically when you bring it to another person. Mm-hmm. And then you can build off the whatever happens from there.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation.
I loved it. Such a delight, Mary. Thank you for having me.
A delight. And so, yeah, so let's definitely make a date to play some D&D next Wednesday night.
Yeah, D&D. I'll be the Dungeon Master.
Yeah, okay. I don't even know what that is. But
you barely do, too. I'm not trying to appropriate anybody's culture here.
I'll be the wizard. So until next time.
Until next time. Thanks, Mary.
Thanks again, Adam, for guest hosting this podcast and providing some valuable insight on dating. You can reach out to Adam at adamboardmanmft.com, which will be in the show notes. And I'm Mary B. Therapy on the socials and marybtherapy.com on the web. Adam will be back in a couple of weeks as my co-host. And until then, thanks for listening.